Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hey there. I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet, one person at a time. Today, we are welcoming Marisha Ducharme, who is the author of a book called The Way Home to Love. And she's also the owner of a wonderful retreat center in New Hampshire called The Sanctuary on Snow Dragon Mountain. Marisha is a spiritual teacher and an energy healer who uses a new approach to interpreting the sacred mysteries and esoteric principles of spiritual understanding. She's going to speak with us today about some of her tools, her life tools that she's developed to deal with the difficulties of our existence and all the things that obstruct the flow of love that we should be in all the time, but we're not because it's a crazy world out there. And she has some really concrete ways to help us come back into peacefulness during turbulent times, which God knows we're in right now. It's a really great topic for today. And her book is really all about how we can develop and use spiritual practices to return to inner peace in our lives, which I think is an incredible topic. What I really love about her work is that she pulls on ancient wisdom teachings from many different cultures and philosophies and religions and finds the underlying universal truths that are there, that are underlying all those systems. And she brings them into something that we can relate to in the modern age, which is super cool and something we desperately need. So let's start the conversation. Welcome, Marisha.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing really great. And thank you for being on the show with me today.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
And so tell us a little bit about this book and about... I don't know how you came to a place where you wanted to write about these big universal truths.
Well, it happened really organically over a period of time. At the sanctuary, we have service time and we have teaching time in different ways. And so the discourses there are ongoing. And one of the people who came on a regular basis felt very compelled to record the discourses that I was giving. So she recorded them, and then she felt compelled to transcribe them. And so it happened very organically like that, and eventually she said, you know, this material and this information could help a lot of people. And so she asked me if I would consider, you know, putting it into a book form. And so it felt really right, and it felt really timely. And so we spent about a year and a half really working on the transcriptions and the topics and bringing it into book form.
And can you fill us in a little bit about what the essence of your book is all about?
Well, when I looked at the discourses and I was wondering what the common thread was in everything as we were putting this book together, and it really had a life of its own, and what it wanted to say was that, and also acknowledge, was that each human being, really, whether we're conscious about it or unconscious about it, we have a very deep need to love and to be loved, and that most of the discourses were prompted by or addressed that underlying issue. Whether we were talking about one thing or another didn't really matter. In the end and at the bottom and in the deepest place was acknowledging, how do we get home inside of ourselves to this place, to this wellspring of love that we really know intuitively is there, but we forget very easily. And so sometimes we search, sometimes we stand conscious, but the drive is still there. And so each of the discourses may be different, but it's all about how to release conflict in one's own consciousness, because love really is the absence of conflict. And so as we enter into the process of releasing our own inner conflicts and obstacles, we open up more and more fully and more satisfyingly to our own true nature, which is love.
That sounds great. I love that concept. And I think often myself that where we go offline, where we become disconnected, is we get disconnected from our how we love ourselves and also the divine love. And when we are disconnected there, then we're disconnected from loving everything else, humanity and the world and ourselves too.
Yeah, it's really a big circle. You know, it's what is within us gets reflected back to us and so forth. And so it's this big circle of how we find love within ourselves. You know, it equates to our ability to be loving and to be compassionate and caring. And then that really translates out to how can we help? How can we serve? How can we contribute to the world to help make the world, you know, just a better place for everyone?
And you have some pretty effective and practical tools, right, to help people come back into that state of love. What do you recommend people do?
Well, the first thing is really one has to be willing to enter into a very deep relationship with the self. And while that sounds like it could be a self-absorbed, selfish kind of thing, it's really anything but that. It's a process that one enters into with oneself that allows this path to unfold. And so it's about understanding that, and then it's about making a commitment to spend a little bit of time, hopefully each day, where you enter into that space, which is a meditative space, it's a spiritual practice place, and where you dedicate some of your time and your energy and your consciousness to healing and to being in that resonance and vibration.
Right, and I saw in your biography that you're also a healer and practice energy medicine. Does that come into the picture for you too?
Oh yes. Well, you know, resonance healing is a kind of healing where when one enters into that divine resonance, all healing can happen. However, it needs to happen. So yes, that has happened through the years as a kind of a side effect of, you know, being on a path and practicing deeply.
And how can we stay in the state of love when there's so much craziness happening around us?
Well, this is where it takes a commitment for each individual soul to really go into a process where you sit with yourself in meditation and you learn and become disciplined. And you, as you're sitting, you know, it sounds like it could be a comfortable thing to just take some time off and sit, but really it's anything but that, because we meet ourselves there, we meet the world there. And what that really means is that we have the courage to face the truth. And sometimes there are obstacles, and sometimes there are, you know, judgments and so forth. And so as we sit, we learn and we really discipline and train ourselves to face those obstacles and those conflicts. And paradoxically, as we face them, that is when they can begin to dissolve and disassemble.
Yeah, I am a big meditator, and I've been doing it really actually my whole life since I was 10, and my parents took me to transcendental meditation because they were hippies, and that's what you did in 1974 if you were a hippie. But so I love what Pema Chodron says about meditation. She says it's like you start looking into a nice clear pool. It's like sitting on the edge of a pool and looking in, and it's all clear. And the longer you sit, it's like taking a big stick and stirring up the muck on the bottom of the pool. And
right.
Then eventually you have to deal with all the muck, right?
Absolutely. You know, I think a lot of people may think of meditation as is kind of checking out or, you know, something that's relaxing and very simple. And while, you know, one can have some wonderful experiences, both are true. Paradoxically, both are true. You know, one may release stress and relax, but one may also really, really be doing a lot of inner work that's very, very challenging. And it really is being willing to stir up the muck and face that, you know.
Yeah, I think so. Do you have a particular meditation practice that you use?
Well, I've used many practices from many different traditions, but really when you have experienced many of them, the universal thing is focusing on the breath. The breath is such a powerful, powerful transformer, and it's really the bridge between matter and spirit. And so being trained in the breath is one of the most profound tools and techniques in order to really successfully, you know, begin to practice. And the breath is what sustains us when we may be having an emotional reaction that's difficult in life about whatever, can be about anything. Using the breath is what helps us to sustain, you know, the mind when the mind is being obsessive or wants to, you know, go off and worry about something or take us off point. So the sitting meditation that I teach is really all about learning how to breathe, learning a couple of different breathing techniques, and then really, really relying on the breath as the transformer. Because when emotional reaction comes up or when the mind is very, very reactive, it is the transformer. It is what has light. The breath has light, and that light has fire, and the fire is what actually kind of burns up and transforms the inner reactions and the inner obstacles.
Right. It's like the light of consciousness, isn't it? Really, that light that's in the breath.
It is. It is the light of consciousness, yes.
Yeah. And that's the so breath, interesting. You know, I think sitting meditation is very difficult for Westerners. You know, I had sort of an unusual experience being exposed to it at such a young age. And I studied some pretty intense meditation techniques. I lived in Japan and studied super hardcore Zen Buddhism and, you know, and I feel like a lot of times, you know, I think that's unusual that mostly Western people really struggle with sitting meditation and maybe benefit from taking a class or learning from a teacher. What do you think? Do you think that's true?
Oh, I think that's true. And I think that, you know, Westerners, we have a moving center. You know, we all like to be moving and doing and emitting. And we're very, you know, active. We're type A kind of society. And so, yes, to sit is not something that comes naturally to us, nor is it in our heritage. However, right. It's in our souls. So once we introduce ourselves to the place, and once we spend enough time there, we really activate a very strong draw, and then it becomes something that we find that we really need to do, and that is really what we need. So I think it's just a matter of, again, bringing oneself there and entering into, you know, to the commitment to return. Because even though it's not culturally instilled in us, it's soulfully instilled in us. So I think it's a natural. I think it's a natural place.
Yeah, and you talk in your book about how it happens is that people kind of split between the mind and the body.
Yes.
And that meditation can be healing for that. Can you explain a little more? I thought that was really interesting. Can you explain a little more about what you mean by that?
Yeah, the act of sitting, the act of taking even 20 minutes, a commitment of 20 minutes to sit down and to not move for 20 minutes and to do some simple alignments like trying to keep the spine relatively straight, enter into the sequence of the breath. What that does is it brings our bodies, and then it calls forth the mind and the emotions to be there as well. Because we're not literally physically moving, we're not splitting. So because the course of the day, we may be doing many things, multitasking, and the mind is over here thinking about one thing, the emotions, you know, come in at another time, so on and so forth. And then the body, we say, oh, you know, gee, my back is sore. But when we enter into meditation, we're bringing all three bodies, you know, the physical body, the emotional body, well, the four bodies, the mental body and the spiritual body into one place. And it is the only way that we can align the four bodies is by bringing them into a state of presence in meditation. And so as we continue the practice, we actually train ourselves. We mature our emotional body. We learn how to witness and breathe into the active or reactive mind. And so through that practice, we come into alignment in the four bodies.
That's great. I you know about the four bodies and have heard that a lot. But I never thought that meditation is the way to bring them all together. That's really cool. It's a really great way to look at it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of techniques, you know, that people enter into, and there's a lot of wonderful ways to heal, and, you know, they're all great. But meditation really coalesces all the four bodies. And again, through the practice and through the training of oneself, that's how we meet ourselves in all of those bodies in one place.
Well, I have a personal belief about spiritual practice and meditation in particular, that we can really only get to a certain point in our growth and development. We can do therapy, we can do acupuncture, we can do all kinds of things, but we kind of stop unless we really pick up a meditation practice and
Absolutely.
Stick with it. And I just
Absolutely.
Think you get to a certain level and you can't progress beyond that level without meditation.
Absolutely. I completely and totally agree with you. And I think that one of the things that can ironically be a detriment to our spiritual growth is trying to be a little bit too superficial, and I call it going sideways. So, you know, we try this particular class, or we check over here, you know, for some other kind of healing modality, and then that doesn't do it, and we go to another place. And so we're really beginning to go sideways when we really just have to go deep and go down and go within.
Yeah.
And we have to pull it into one place in order to really make any progress.
Right. And I think that's because meditation is so difficult, you know, that people go sideways. And like, I started my spiritual life really as a martial artist, and that's what I was doing in Japan. And martial artists have that like kind of discipline, you know, and you don't get anywhere in martial arts without discipline. And you also don't change styles, you know, if you want to progress. Like, you stick with what you're doing, and that's like the deepening process you were talking about, rather than going
Absolutely.
Sideways. So it's
Absolutely.
Kind of, when we go sideways, it's like we're in our resistance around handling maybe the muck that we're stirring up when we sit down to meditate.
Absolutely. One of my teachers taught me a long time ago, he would say, you know, sometimes students want to find water because they're very thirsty, but they dig a shallow well and there's no water, and then they dig another shallow well and there's no water, and they keep digging shallow wells, when really, if you just dug deeper in one well, you'd get all the water you need.
I like that. So what do we do when we have the impulse to go sideways? How do we bring ourselves back to the mat?
Well, this sounds very, very simple, but it is really, you know, the different ways that we are resistant within ourselves. And again, it's going back to that, making that commitment to be in that deep relationship with oneself. And I think it's easy to know when we are getting away from that, when we are our resistances are coming up. And I think we just have to be honest with ourselves and then do that really deeper level of work by going back and sitting, you know, daily for a certain period of time. And when somebody's first coming into it, even a 20-minute commitment is huge. It's huge because it's the beginning, you know, and then just sit with yourself for 20 minutes and do the breath. And that's returning again and again, no matter how many times the resistances come up.
And do you feel like this kind of work can also help us, like at a karmic level, help clearing up karmic patterns?
Absolutely, because without it, we can't clear up the karmic patterns. The karmic patterns live in the emotional body. And so we are habitual, repetitive creatures that really live our lives out of this unconscious reaction to life. And so when we're unconscious, we keep reacting in the same way over and over and over again. Sometimes the stimulus gets changed, but the reaction is the same. And then the only way you can change that repetitive habitual reaction is by sitting with it as it arises and being with it and bringing the breath to it. The breath is the transformer. And so that light that is being inhaled in the breath is the fire that starts to burn up the repetitive habitual reaction, which is karma. So really, I think without meditation, you cannot change your karma.
I happen to agree. And I know a lot of people will go to energy work because I'm an energy worker and a psychic. And I know a lot of people want to seek that kind of healing, but I don't know how effective it can be. Sometimes effective, but I think it really is spiritual practice. And lots, you know, real dedication to spiritual practice. It is the best thing to transform our karma. I've seen the same thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, you've been on the path for a long time, and you know, healing, there is a paradox that exists, and that is that healing can be instantaneous. But paradoxically, healing also requires that we go deep and we face whatever obstacles are keeping us from the love that we really all require.
We come back into that state of love through meditation, right? Yeah. After we clear through the muck, we clear through a little muck, and then we find that state of love again.
Absolutely. And really, it's the fire. It's the fire of the light that brings us into, in the yogic world, what's called tapas. And tapas is like a big furnace. It's creating a fire within that can actually burn up the karmic patterns, and it burns up the, you know, the dross and the obscurations. And so the fire purifies. And so when we have undergone purification, we certainly experience, you know, wonderful periods of light and openness and love. And so, and then, of course, because of the nature of the soul and the journey, sometimes then, okay, the clouds come, you enter and you stay in the process. So it's a commitment to the cycle, you know, to the cycle of grace, to the cycle of meditation.
And if people wanted to get your book and find out more about you, tell us how we can find you.
So right now, the book is available in a couple of places. One is to go to Amazon.com and to type in the name of the book, The Way Home to Love, A Guide to Peace in Turbulent Times. Or you can type in Marisha Ducharme and order the book. You can also get it from BalboaPress.com and order it there as well.
And you have a website?
I have a website, and it's snowdragonsanctuary.com. snowdragonsanctuary.com.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. The time went by so fast. I feel like we could have talked all night about this, but I really appreciate you being here with me tonight.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. And thank all of you guys out there in Empower Radio Land for being with me here tonight on The Miracle of Healing. We will catch you all next time. In the meantime, here we are, healing the planet one person at a time.